It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome to Money for Lunch. It is a fantastic Tuesday, a tubular Tuesday, a tremendous Tuesday. Hey, we're just days away from Star Wars. And so if you're going to be in the Gilbert, Phoenix area, primarily the Gilbert area, I'm going to be hosting a Star Wars event. So hit me up. Send me a little direct message, if you will, if you want to come attend my free Star Wars event. We're going to be renting out a whole theater. It's going to be spectacular. There's going to be all sorts of fun stuff and special guests, and it's just going to be a blast. So it's going to be a very intimate party. It's one of these super luxury theaters with the really big overstuffed seats, and it is going to be spectacular. And so if you're going to be in the Gilbert area and you want to come down and join us, let me know, hit me up here, I'll send you out the detail. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's free to attend. So we're going to rent the whole theater out. We're going to let in, you know, some friends, some members, some clients, some supporters of Money for Lunch, as well as, you know, friends and, like I said, people who support me year round. I appreciate that. And this is my favorite way of showing you how much I appreciate it, you know, attending Star Wars for free at a luxury theater in Gilbert, Arizona. How much more fun can you have? I just don't know. All right. So I want to talk about this. I want to talk about comfort. And comfort is a silent killer. The reality is that, look, one of the reasons we work so hard and sometimes we put ourselves through such uncomfortable situations is so we can therefore purchase the comforts of life. First class versus coach. Leather couch versus a cloth couch, right? A nice week or 10-day vacation with it versus a 3-day getaway. Whatever those comforts are for you. However, in order to be that comfortable, you have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Anything I've ever done in my life, any major breakthrough I've ever had, was being uncomfortable. When I first started lifting weights, back in when I was 16 or 17, it was uncomfortable. My friend and I were the smallest kids in the gym. And it was overwhelming. It was intimidating. It was extremely uncomfortable. We did it anyway. Later on, what else was uncomfortable? Man, just about everything. Move forward or fast forward, I meet the girl of my dreams, and asking her to marry me was extremely uncomfortable. I remember this day, my heart was just racing. It's that big thing. I mean, it's like asking a girl on a date times 20. So, yeah, extremely uncomfortable. Luckily, she said yes. And since then, we've been married for 30 years. So for the last 30 years, she's probably been a bit uncomfortable. Life can be so cruel sometimes. But really, folks, look, for those who have been married, it's uncomfortable. For those who started a business, remember when you started your business, how uncomfortable that was? It was scary. We were put on this earth to do hard and scary things. Listen, we all want more. And in order to have more, we have to be willing to be uncomfortable, like all the time. Think about it. What do you want more of? More money? Well, in order to have more money, you have to be uncomfortable doing some things with your money. Saving money, investing your money can be uncomfortable. Working harder, working smarter, working differently, thinking outside the box, all those are uncomfortable. What else? What else do you want more of? You want more fitness, more health? Again, you have to be uncomfortable. Maybe change your diet. Maybe get to the gym 3 or 4 times a week. That's uncomfortable. Look, I'm up at 5 o'clock in the morning to be in the gym by 5:30. It's cold. It's uncomfortable. But man, do I love it when I get in there. Getting there is uncomfortable. Getting there, it's all right. When I was studying to be an attorney, right? When I was going to law school, better yet, that's probably a more accurate statement. When I was, you know, going to law school, we had to do these mock trials. And one of the things I started doing, because it can be uncomfortable, so I started going to a real trial. I'd go to courthouses and courtrooms, and I would get comfortable, get familiar, if you will, with surroundings and court procedures and stuff like that. So when it's time to do a mock trial, man, I crushed it, but it was still uncomfortable because you're being judged not only by your peers, but by the professors. And of course, no matter how good you think you are, they're going to tweak you ever so gently. So you have to become uncomfortable. No, you have to become comfortable with uncomfortable, right? So what do you want more of? It's going to require you to be uncomfortable to achieve that more. Look, if you're dissatisfied with any area of your life, I'm going to venture to say that you're probably too comfortable where you're at now. Does that make sense? For example, if you're unhappy with your relationship, you're probably too comfortable in the relationship. Oh, my wife and I never go out. We never have enough sex. Oh, we never go, you know, we never do anything exciting. Get out there. Crank it up. Do it. I mean, surprise your husband. Surprise your wife and say, this is what we're going to go do. And guess what? There's going to be resistance. Oh, man, I hate it. I hate going to new things. It's uncomfortable, man. But you know what? I always enjoy it when I go. And I'm always reminded that it's all about expanding, right? It's not just about making money. That's just one area. There's a lot of people who have a lot of money, but they're miserable and unhealthy and been divorced 4 or 5 times, Donald Trump. I'm just messing with him because now he's the, you know, soon-to-be president of the United States. So I got to pick on him. But bottom line is, look, if you're comfortable with your relationship to the point that it's become stale, you're in a rut, get out of it. You got to shake it up. You got to do things that are uncomfortable. Take up dancing together. Start going on dates together. Do stuff together. And before you know it, you have romance back in your life. I guarantee if you start working out and your spouse says, why are you working out? Why are you changing your diet? Why are you looking so good? Honey, I want to look good for you. I want to spice up our romance. Chances are your spouse is going to say, well, I want to do that too. And let me tell you, nothing brings a couple together than being uncomfortable together. Going to the gym together, not only is that a little bit intimidated if you haven't been or haven't been in a while, but doing it together bonds you in a special way. So if you want to have a special relationship, go do uncomfortable things with people that you're comfortable with. Your spouse, your best friend, right? Bottom line is, your potential is here. Most of us are living somewhere down here, way beneath our potential. Why? Because right here is uncomfortable. All of this makes us cringe. Makes us afraid, makes us question who we are. If you want to do something, but you're afraid you're going to be made fun of, you should do it. That's called uncomfortable, and that's probably exactly why you should do it. Get over the fear of other people. I refuse to let people or events control me or my attitude. It is an affirmation that I have shared with millions of people. I refuse to let people or events control me or my attitude. When you're no longer afraid of people, when you don't care about their criticism, their jabs, their whatever, the naysayers, dude, man, you all of a sudden, boom, your life bounces in a big way. I kid you not. Look, whatever you want out of life and whatever you've gotten out of life is because you took a risk. You desired to be uncomfortable long enough to grab it. If you've ever asked a girl out, that was probably pretty nerve-wracking. It was very uncomfortable. You know, in the good old days when I used to go to nightclubs, you know, the deal was you asked the girl out to dance. Nowadays, my wife and I go to a nightclub and everybody's dancing with their friends, right? So nobody's taking a risk. If you like somebody, you just kind of dance right with them together without necessarily asking them, and then you dance away. It's hysterical. A lot of people will dance by themselves. Hey, that at least takes a little bit of guts. I respect you if you're out on the dance floor dancing by yourself. You're not willing to take the ultimate risk of asking somebody, but dude, you're at least, you know, jamming to your tune and you're having fun dancing by yourself. God bless you. You've taken a very brave step. So, comfort is a silent killer. Start thinking about all the stuff that you want to do, and the reason you haven't done it probably is fear. It's probably because you're uncomfortable. It's probably because you're afraid people are going to laugh at you, judge you, may even alienate you. That's right. As you start to do things, some people will leave you alone. They're going to criticize you. Think, oh, dude, you think you're special now because you achieved this and you did that. Oh, you wrote your book? Oh, now you think you're better than me? I'm leaving you alone. It will happen. And that's a good thing. Your friends will not mind what you do. Your true friends could not care and will not mind what you do. Those who care don't matter. And those who matter won't care. When you get up to the different levels of success, all you're going to do is get encouraged and rewarded by those people who've been there, by those people who are maybe slightly ahead of you. Success is nothing more than a parade route, right? There's always somebody ahead of you and there's always somebody behind you. We're all following a parade route, if you will. It's an amazing thing. All right, so listen, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve, go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at Money.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro.
And Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right,
it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
In Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Larry Ratliff. Larry Ratliff is a public speaker, humorist, author, and nationally known award-winning film critic. He has reviewed thousands of movies, traveled the world interviewing A-list celebrities, and covered the Academy Awards for NBC during his 30-plus year career. Movie Memories presentations, which run about an hour, combine Larry's humor and quick wit movie clips, and behind-the-scenes insights that entertain while celebrating the magic of movies, past and present. I'm a big movie buff. I can't wait to get into this. Larry Ratliff, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, Bert, thank you very much. You know, people are always asking me, what are we going to do for lunch today? And now I know what to tell them. Let's do something. Let's get some money, you know. That
yeah,
works for
absolutely.
Me.
You know what? And the nice thing about your particular industry is that, you know, you could have a show called Movie for Lunch, because when people are around Larry Ratliff, they're talking about movies and the magic of movies. So that works. And of course, you know, movies are all about money as well. So that works either way.
Oh, yeah. You know, they don't call it show business for nothing. And my experience tells me that they emphasize that second word. It's
yeah.
all about the bottom line these days, especially, I'm afraid.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well,
but I
know,
just...
It used to be, what do you call it, before show business, I think they used to call it, you know, show me the money business. But anyway, so you're right. Show business is what it's all about.
Sure. Well, you can still find some great films out there, and you can find some terrific art films. I personally, for my own pleasure, like to explore foreign films in their native language and everything. But mainstream films especially seem to be all about the money, and especially if they're like, I don't know, I hate the word sequel even when it comes around the first time, but when you start getting into movies like 3, 4, and 5, I say ho hum pretty much. Give me
well, you know what?
Give me an original story. That's what I'm looking for. And don't spend 3 hours telling it. If you can't tell a story in an hour and a half, you know, I think you need to write it again and get it down to where it should be.
Absolutely. And you know, I hope Peter Jackson, you're hearing this, because he's my favorite person to example as take a nice good movie and turn it into a 3-hour monster. You know, I mean, it's you know, just in case, Peter Jackson, you know, you're checking this out. We don't care how much time the elves and their buddies walked and canoed. We get it. It was a long time. We don't need to spend an hour have you actually showing us that. And he did the same thing with what's the monkey movie? Not Donkey Kong, King Kong.
Oh, it was King Kong. Yeah. Yeah, well, I like Jack Black, and I respect Peter Jackson, but I think he tends to drag him out. And you know, Bert, part of the reason for that, especially those mega-budget big action flicks, they have these special effects, and a lot of people don't know that they order the special effects to be created before they even start filming the movie. And that's
sure.
why a lot of these movies run too long, because no director who put in his budget $5 million for a special effect that lasts 10 minutes is going to cut it out. So we suffer out in the audience, you know. And that's why I say when you go to the movies, you should never order one of those supersized drinks, because you will never make it these days.
Oh, all right, Norma Mendez, we're live on, Facebook Live. Hi, Bert, this is Norma from Brooklyn, New York. I love New York. I love Brooklyn, New York. A lot of good friends there in Brooklyn. So thank you, Norma, for not only stopping by on Facebook Live, but also sharing that. So I appreciate that very much. And, yeah, you know what, and that's interesting, because I've always looked at the special effects as – enhancing the story versus being the story, right? So, for example, to me, you look at Star Wars. Star Wars, to me, is a great example of, you know, they could have gone crazy with the special effects, especially the original three, but they really didn't. I mean, yes, the lightsabers, I think, were the biggest ooh-ah. We had seen laser bolts before, so that wasn't a big deal. But when you look mm-hmm. at Star Wars, I think the thing that thrills most people is the struggle between good and evil, the fact that these low-tech civilizations seem to always take kick butt of the major technology. You know, they destroy the Death Star, and they also talk about using the Force. And what I love about the Force is, for the most part, the Force is nothing more than a auditory or audio special effects. It's a wish,
right?
A sound, or it's Obi-Wan Kenobi saying, "Luke, run." Well, thanks.
That's true.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I've interviewed a lot of the top special effects producers and directors around the world, including Peter Jackson's crew, which are some of the best in New Zealand. And I've asked them, which of the special effects are you most proud of? And they said, it's the ones you never notice. And that's what they like to do. The special effect that gets a movie from point A to point B without you ever realizing that it's a special effect. You know, once you've seen a toaster turned into a monster in your kitchen and start battling out with a microwave oven, you know, and they supersize and start tromping through Chicago, that's pretty fun, you know, the first five or six times. But come on, let's think of some new stuff.
Right. Well, you know, and I want to talk about this, since we're talking about special effects, and then we're going to get into the meat of our interview today. But I'm having so much fun, Larry, with this whole special effects thing. CinemaCon, I'm invited there every year. And so last year I went to CinemaCon for my first time. And, you know, they are investing millions and millions of, dollars in making the chairs, making the chairs kind of, you know, motivate back and forth, and they jolt and they shake and they vibrate. You know, they're trying to give that 4D effect. And so we sat in one of these chairs, and we were jostled about so much that I was exhausted after just 15 minutes. You wouldn't want to watch an action movie, you know, and be in one of these chairs. You would, it's being on a kind of a smaller version of a roller coaster. You were dipped and jived and jostled so much that after a while, it kind of interrupted me enjoying the movie because I was constantly being jerked around.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I like movies that can live on the words and the script. And I grew up in the era of the gimmicks, you know, when the 3D first came out, and that was kind of fun. And then they even actually used to have scratch and sniff movies, where they would give you a card when you go in, and a number would come up, and it would say, okay, scratch off number one, and you smell like a beautiful forest or something like that. And I was just always scared of that because I didn't know what was coming up next. But I can kind of live without the gimmicks. I like the special effects that take us to other worlds, you know. And when you go to another world, all bets are off. I'm just saying, let's not overdo it. And like you say in the Star Wars, less is really more. And I think that's one thing they're doing right about that.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, that is one of my favorite things about going to the movies or reading a book, is that you're immediately transported to a different world, right? And I think most people love that. We've all experienced reading a book. And when we compare the book to the movie, no matter how close that movie is to the book, it's just not as good. It's not as good as our own imagination, is really what we're saying. The book's always better. People say that time and time again. And that is because we're able to immerse ourselves in there, and we're able to plug in our own, for lack of better terms, our own special effects.
Yeah. I even tell people a lot of times they complain just that, you know, that book was much better than the movie. And I say, okay, do it this way. Because when they make a movie out of a great book, they have to leave a lot of stuff out. And they have to combine characters. You know, a book, let's say it has 300 pages. Well, one page is basically a minute on screen. And with hopefully we don't have too many 300-minute movies. So when they combine all of that, they leave stuff out. So I tell them, go to the movie first and then read the book. It just expands everything, and it's so much better.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you one other thing. I've talked to a lot of authors who sold their books to Hollywood, and I can't remember who it was, but one famous author told me, he said, here's what you do if you're going to sell your novel, your really good book to Hollywood. He said, you drive up to the California border, and you throw your book over the border, and they throw your check over to your side. You get back in your car and drive home, and then forget about it.
That's funny. Well, you know, doggone it. His name now escapes me since you said that. He wrote the New York Times bestselling book, Meg, M-E-G. And, and so it became an instant New York Times bestseller. Then he got, I think within a couple of months or even before the book was released, because it had gotten so much publicity, it had gotten a book deal. So the book is called Meg, M-E-G, and it's about a massive, giant, prehistoric shark. And so he got a book deal right away. Then the book deal kind of died. He had to buy the movie rights back, sold it, bought it back. 20 years later, from the release of the original book, the movie finally got, or is currently being made. Jason Statham is playing the main character in this movie, but it took.
He's a great actor. Yeah.
Great actor, a guest of our show. Anyway, just a really nice guy. But bottom line is, my point being is, you could get a movie deal and the movie may not get made, or it may take 5, 10, 15, 20 years to be made. This guy got an advance against the movie rights, had to buy the movie rights back, not once, but twice. So you're right about Hollywood. You know, it's just, you never know. Look, any deal, you never know how it's going to happen. And bottom line is, if you are, you know, if you write that book, just be glad you wrote the book. Be happy about that. If you get a movie deal, great, but don't count on it. And don't count on it, I would say, doing anything for you until it actually does something for you.
That's great advice. It really is. Just wait and see what happens, you know.
Wait and see what happens.
Someone said that real talent will always find a way to the top, and so we'll see about that. That may be true.
Absolutely. Let's talk about this real quick. I want to talk, speaking of books, let's talk about your book. Did I Write That Out Loud? I love that. It's a catchy title. But let's talk about, what is the book about? What is this, Did I Write That Out Loud mean? Tell us about your book.
Well, you know, Bert, I've always sort of looked at life just a little different, just a little skewed. And basically, I'm a glass half full kind of guy, but my glass maybe has a little crack at the top, and it might be a little smudged with dirt, you know. So I'm hopeful, but there are problems. There are problems along the way. So Did I Write That Out Loud is two things. It's writing about things that some people might not find humor in, but I do. For instance, When I got to be Medicare eligible, a doctor I'd been with for many years and helped start her practice, she decided that she didn't want to treat Medicare patients because it was just too much darn trouble. And so there's a chapter in there about my doctor broke up with me today. She wants to see other people, you know. So I write about that. And the subtitle is It's Only Life, and that's, we might as well find a silver lining. You know, when I was a kid, I was really happy. We didn't have much money. We grew up in Grand Prairie, Texas. My dad worked at an aircraft plant, but everything was fine until I was about 12 years old. Every year, my mom would take me to get a new pair of blue jeans, and I always had sort of trouble with my weight. I didn't realize it then, but I thought I was just like everybody else. And we went to a department store. I won't mention the name. My mom took me to the blue jean department for boys, and the guy took one look at me and said, well, take little Larry over to the husky department. And ever since then, I've hated the word husky for one thing. And I just find humor in that stuff. I mean, did that guy know, you know, he was just dealing with a customer, but did he know that he damaged my life forever? Well, maybe, because I send him a note about it about every Thursday. But no, just kidding. But
well,
I write
Larry,
about things like that.
It could have been worse. He could have just said, hey, why don't we take him over to the girl department? That, I think, would have been, you know, that would have been much worse.
Yeah, I know. Well, that I would have been even more warped than I am now. But the thing about my book is it's a collection of essays that a lot of them are about movies and movie stars and my experiences at the movies. The thing is, it's a fun read. They're little short chapters. They're great to just take a 5-minute break from life and read a chapter or two, and kind of my life will make you feel better about your life. I almost guarantee it. And if you buy my book in Britain, it's you'll be able to lose a few pounds. You know, I'm not selling it as a diet book, but it'll cost you a few pounds in Great Britain.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to have to take that. I'm going to have to use that. I hope you guys got that. If you buy the book in Britain or England, you'll lose a few pounds. Put on tunch.
Yeah.
All right. I love it. You know what? If you think about it, what's interesting is, again, the subtitle is We Might As Well Laugh, It's Only Life. I think that there's a real lesson there, because we've all heard that, you know, I laughed about this, you know, a year or two later, or, you know, I'll laugh about this in the future. And sometimes we know that whatever is happening to us now might be a little tragic, but at the same time, we know it's funny, you know?
I know.
So sometimes it's better to laugh now versus waiting to laugh. Laugh now, because you'll enjoy it more.
That's right. And it helps you get through the day. And I even talk about, I have a serious addiction that a lot of people don't even write about. I openly admit that I'm addicted to ice cream, and, you know, a lot of people laugh, but it's serious. You know, if addiction was crack cocaine, I would be living in a cardboard box somewhere out on some sidewalk, because I just can't stop. And I even used to eat it before it would melt enough to eat. I'd take a knife and I would pry a bite out until it melted from a half gallon. And one time, this is absolutely true, I stuck a knife in a bite of ice cream, swallowed it, was about to stick the knife in again, and there was a piece of the knife missing about the size of your thumbnail. And so I thought, I'm going to die. But if I'm going to die, might as well finish this ice cream first. Right? So then I just kept eating.
I love it.
That's what I'm saying. We might as well laugh, you know.
And see, that's a great, I think, a great philosophy. And since you're a Texas boy, I grew up in Texas. And, I have to ask this, because since you have this addiction to ice cream and we're both from Texas, I'm missing my Bluebell ice cream. You know, I haven't gotten any Bluebell since what? They had that situation about a year or so ago. And then at the beginning of this year, they were going to be cranking out Bluebell again. Out here in Phoenix, we have yet to get any Bluebell. So any skinny on the Bluebell production?
Well, they're back in production. I almost mentioned Bluebell, but I didn't want to do too much product placement. But for me, it's Bluebell homemade vanilla. And
yes!
I think it's that to me, that's nectar of the gods. And I've interviewed a lot of directors and movie stars who say, oh, you're from Texas. That's where they have Bluebell ice cream. And I say, yeah, that's why I'm there, basically. And but Bert, how do you make it through the day if you don't have Bluebell? We've got to get you some.
Well, you know, and it's so funny, too. By the way, somebody on Facebook just asked me, hey, who are you interviewing? So I'm interviewing Larry Ratliff. Larry Ratliff is the best-selling author of the book. We were just talking about it. Did I Write That Out Loud? we might as well laugh. It's only life available at Amazon or wherever good books are sold. And we're talking about our favorite ice cream in the world, Bluebell. And so, Larry, the way I make it without my Bluebell is I've been doing a lot of heroin. So, I'm waiting for the Bluebell. And what's really funny is I've asked my producer multiple times, we have to get somebody from Bluebell on the show to talk about what's going on, because everybody loves Bluebell. And so, you know, I think, you know, they have not responded. So maybe you can put some pressure on the good people there of Bluebell and get them on the show and get me some samples to try, because it is bad. It's bad.
Well, I will do my best. And I must tell you, before Bluebell came along in the 70s, I was a fan of the Fudge Bomb. Do you know the Fudge Bomb?
The Fudge
Bomb,
yeah.
It's on a stick. Yeah, and it's chocolate and banana. I used to go to the neighborhood corner store, 7-Eleven or whatever, and I'd buy them about five at a time. And I would eat them, and I would throw the packages behind the seat of my car. And one time, I interviewed Art Linkletter, the late, great Art Linkletter in Dallas.
Sure.
And his car didn't pick him up to get him to the airport. And he said, listen, my car didn't show up. I got a flight out of Love Field. Could you please take me to the airport? And I thought, oh, my gosh, he wants to go in my car. So we got my little Nova, and I said, just a minute, Mr. Linkletter. And I had to shovel all the Fudge Bomb wrappers out of my front seat into the back seat. And we rode to the airport, had another great conversation. And he said, Fudge Bombs, those are pretty good. So we should have stopped. I should have gotten Art Linkletter one. But now I moved on to the harder stuff, you know, the Bluebell.
Well, you know, and I know what I'm about to tell you might seem a bit criminal to an expert like yourself, but one of my favorite Bluebell products is the sugar-free Bluebell Popsicle. They taste incredible, and there's nothing like them.
Yes.
In the world. They're like 10 calories, and you know, and I've literally gone fishing to show you how crazy I am. Went fishing one day, and in my cooler was a box of the Bluebell sugar-free popsicles. And in the 2 or 3 hours we're out there fishing, I ended up fishing ate the entire box. I think each of my kids got one popsicle, but they were too busy fishing and I was too busy eating my popsicles. It was a fantastic day. And, personally, I don't feel guilty about eating 4 or 5 or 10 popsicles because they're only 10 calories a pop.
Oh, I know. I've done that. And one time my grandson was visiting us when he was, 7 or 8. And it was the evening, you know, and I was dieting at the time. And I used to do that. And for my evening snack, I would eat like 5 or 6 popsicles because it'd be 60 calories, like you say. And
right.
So my wife asked my grandson, would you like a popsicle? And he said, well, yes, thank you. So she gave him one popsicle. And then I came walking in with a handful for me. And he said, hey, what's going on? Well, I must tell you about your grandpa here. I've got this little... Yeah. Got this little problem.
You mentioned Art Linkletter, which is an old favorite of mine. A lot of us love Art Linkletter. And obviously, you spent decades interviewing A-list celebrities. And so I want to talk about maybe some of the standouts that you remember. So, you know, you mentioned Art Linkletter. Anybody else that stands out as one of your interviews, either favorite or possibly maybe not so favorite?
Well, you know, Bert, there have been a lot of them who are really good, and most of the big stars I've interviewed multiple times. But if I had to just pick one, it would be Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks is just special. You know, the Tom Hanks that we know and love on the screen is the Tom Hanks that I've encountered probably 20 or 25 times. And I remember when he had a movie that I really liked back in 1990 that sort of got lost and I think was really underrated. It was called Joe Versus the Volcano. And
sure.
It's a really dark, dark, dark comedy, which I like if it's done right. And they the studio called me up and said, can you interview Tom, say, Wednesday in New York? And this was like on a Monday. And I said, oh, I can't, because I was tied to a newspaper at the time, the San Antonio Express News. And I said, I can't. Wednesday's deadline day. And they said, okay, can you interview Tom Thursday in Chicago? Nope, can't do it then. I'm busy then, too. Anyway, we settled on Friday in San Francisco. And so they said, well, just go to the so-and-so hotel, go up to the desk, and tell them you're there to meet. It wasn't Tom Hanks's room. It was like Harvey Schwartz. Tell him I don't remember the name exactly, but it was a fake name. Anyway, they said, okay, Mr. Schwartz is in room 1421. So I go to 1421, and as you probably know, when you interview these celebrities, there's all kinds of handlers around. There's somebody from the movie studio. A lot of the big stars have their own entourage and, makeup, and everybody's got to have two or three yes men, you know, just to make them feel good through the day and all that. I knocked on the door, and Tom Hanks answered the door, and it was only Tom Hanks. And we talked for about an hour and 15 minutes. It was supposed to be 30 minutes. We talked about an hour and 15 minutes about the movies, about growing up in Oakland. When he was a kid, he grew up poor. I think his dad was a cook, and he got a job working at the Oakland baseball stadium as a vendor, you know, selling popcorn or peanuts in the stands. And he made his first money that day, and he was so proud. And walking home, he got mugged and lost his whatever, $14 or whatever. But, you know, stuff that somebody like Tom Hanks wouldn't say. And he was just my favorite. But a lot of the others are terrific. George Clooney is always a joy, although I never really thought that he completely opened up. Also, the late Robin Williams, I was a big fan of his. And he was a guy who would come in bursting with energy, or he was kind of a roller coaster. His emotions would ebb and flow. And I remember one time in L.A., it was a group interview, about five of us interviewing Robin Williams, and he was in a real down mood that day. And I think my fellow interviewers were a little thrown off by it because, you know, usually they fire questions and you have to fight to get your question in, but people weren't saying much. And so finally I asked Robin Williams, where do all those ad-libs come from? I mean, what happens when you just – something hilarious comes out of your mouth? And he looked at me and said, I honestly don't know. He said, sometimes it's just like a bolt of lightning that hits my head and something comes out. And that was true much of the time. But other times, of course, he would go to a comedy club and work that stuff out. That's what comedians do. But that was a rare moment with him. And I still miss Robin Williams. I talk about him in my book as well.
Yeah, you know what? Robin Williams is one of those individuals that a lot of us struggle to understand. And this goes to show you how important it is, because I think all of us struggle with our own demons, right? We all struggle.
Of course.
And so with Robin Williams, they were obviously bigger. Something happened that he felt that was his way to go. But I love and adore Robin Williams. Never met him, but like a lot of us, he had, you know, two or three sides of him. He had that side that was so energetic, as you're talking about, and the side that was so sad and miserable. And sometimes, if we let the thoughts in our heads dominate us, it can have these terrible, terrible repercussions. And I think he's a great example of that. And he's actually, to me, a great example of both, because he had thoughts that dominated him that helped him create this wonderful career. And then, of course, he had these other thoughts that dominated him that eventually cost him his life. But what a wonderful, gifted individual. You know what? And I've heard that, switching gears to Tom Hanks, I've heard a lot of great things about Tom Hanks. He's a very genuine guy, very low key. And so I'm glad to know that. I'm hoping to interview him shortly, And I'm looking forward to that. Like a lot of people, I grew up with Tom Hanks. Remember, what was the sitcom that him that he had with, Peter, whatever his name was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What was the name of that?
Sister?
Yeah, I know. I can't quite remember the name of it. I'll think of it here in a second. Sometimes, Bert, thoughts come to me a little later than to other people.
Yeah, same here. So,
yeah.
Same here.
Yeah, I tell you.
It's very possible that it's
bosom.
Bosom buddies.
Bosom buddies. Yeah.
Yes, bosom buddies. Absolutely.
Thank God for Google, Bert. Yeah.
Thank God for Google. I'm glad you did that, Larry. That was excellent. Bosom buddies. So, you mentioned Robin Williams, you mentioned Tom Hanks, and you mentioned George Clooney. And talk about this a little bit. You're a movie critic, and then if I understand it correctly, again, the movie studios will put on a press junket, and they'll fly in movie critics from, the nation, and you guys go in there, and those four celebrities may do 15 or 20 interviews that day.
Oh, sometimes it's more than that. When Dances with Wolves opened, they had a huge gathering in Washington, D.C., and they had the world premiere with Kevin Costner and everything, and they inducted him into an Indian nation. A lot of senators and politicos and congressmen were there. It was a huge event, and I'll tell you two things about it real quickly. The movie studio brought in their own projectionist because they wanted everything to go perfect. Well, the movie started, and about 5 minutes into it, the bulb exploded, which happens sometimes. So I had to stop the movie. And Costner at the time had a son who was about 7 sitting beside him. So I stopped the movie, and it took about 20 minutes. And somehow when that projectionist they imported from Hollywood for the special event restarted the movie, he got flustered or something, and the movie started upside down and backwards. So then they had to stop the movie again, and there was about another 20-minute delay. And if you look around the peripheral of this beautiful hall they had it in, you see people kind of heading for the exits and stuff. Well, the next day, I was Kevin Costner's TV interview number 52, about 6:30 p.m. And those guys, they do that all day long. And I got to Kevin's, Mr. Costner's door. I don't know him that well. I got there and I said, hi. And I said, boy, it's been a long day for you. And he said, I know. Come on in. Let's do this. So I sat down and I said, last night was kind of strange, wasn't it? And he said, let me tell you something. He said, when the movie shut down for the second time, my 7-year-old son looked at me and said, Daddy, is it over? And I said, yes, son, I think it's over. It's all over for me. But, they bring in critics from all over usually about 40 critics from the United States. I'm not doing that so much anymore. Doing mostly the speaking engagements, but I have a lot of friends from around the country who are critics, and also from Canada and South America, other parts of the world. And I went to New York so many weekends one year. I believe it was like 42 weekends out of one year I travel. My wife pointed that out to me every few days. Anyway, the American Airlines ticket agent, one of them at LaGuardia Airport, thought I lived in New York. So when I was there just before Christmas one year, I was I was checking in to come back to San Antonio where I live, and she said, oh, you going home for the holidays? And I said, well, yeah, I am. I kind of live there. But it was fun. Speaking of bosom buddies, some of my best friends are my film critics, like Jack Garner, who's up in Rochester, New York, and just some other critics around the country. It's you know, we were together every weekend, a lot of weekends, and you bond with people that way.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, sometimes critics have their own critics, usually movie studios and celebrities. What's the hardest thing about being a movie critic and a writer?
Well, you know, a lot of people have different things that bother them, but to me, I didn't like to gush about a movie. If I really, really liked a movie, I like to point out why I liked it without saying, boy, this is the best thing I've ever seen. You'll never see another movie this great. Best movie of the year. I get mad at critics who about, I don't know, February 20th say, this is the best film of the year. And I say, well, you got a little bit of the year to go there, bub. Let's see what else happens. But that was a hard thing for me. It's easy. It's easy to trash a movie that's not very good, or it has an unfortunate title, like there was a movie titled Bad Movie. And I thought, well, you're just setting me up there. You know, I'm ready to go. But the hardest thing was just not gushing for me.
Right, right. Yeah, you know what? And I think that would be tough. I'm, like I said, I'm a big movie buff. And you know, I think it's difficult to sit there and criticize somebody else's work. And it's just as difficult to try to remain professional when there's a movie that you truly, truly love. I agree with you.
Yeah.
But you know what? At the same time, it's great. It's great. It's a great, what do you call it, career to be able to talk about things that you love, and, you know, and to be able to write and express yourself that way. And what a blessing that you've been able to do that. The book, again, is Did I Write That Out Loud? We Might As Well Laugh. It's Only Life. And the author is Larry Ratliff. Larry Ratliff, it's been so much fun having you on the show. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about your book, your favorite movies, and your celebrity interviews. Larry Ratliff, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today.
I would love to come back, Bert. You've been so much fun to talk to, and thank you for having me on.
You bet, you bet. Good stuff there from Larry Ratliff. And the book, again, is Did I Write That Out Loud? We Might As Well Laugh. It's Only Life. You can find it at Amazon or wherever good books are sold. And you can check out Larry Ratliff, it looks like Twitter. And anyway, it's always a pleasure to have you guys here on the show, listening, your support. I appreciate everybody's support on Facebook Live as we try to integrate these two mediums together. I hope that it brings you joy. I hope that you find some pleasure in it. I hope it makes your life better. And if you have questions or comments, leave them in the comment section or reach out to me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.